the UFC. Yo, shit. You motherfucker didn't look after nobody.
And he threw a big pity party for himself. Crying on camera and shit.
And if we kick them all out, you'll have nothing to watch but football and mixed martial arts, which are not the arts.
It's not going to be everybody's thing. And the last thing in the world I expect is an uppity 80-year-old lady to be in our demographic and love mixed martial arts.
I shouldn't have came back. I shouldn't have been in the ring tonight. They can do it at the top level, like Frankie Edgar.
I don't care about how this pay-per-view does. I don't care how much money I make. I don't care about interviews, and I don't care how I look. All I care about is winning my belt back on Friday night.
Hello?
Hey. What are you watching?
Soccer.
Why?
Because I like watching soccer.
That's a logical answer.
I taped Liverpool's game earlier today. I didn't spoil it, so I have something to put on in the background.
Liverpool's a weird name of a city.
There's a lot of pools over there.
No, but like liver, like, I don't know. I think of like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's black pool and brown pool. I don't know. Kidney pool.
Yeah, it sounds gross, right?
I don't know. Maybe it's, I'm sure there's some, I don't fucking know. I just like the soccer team.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Whatever. Let's do this show.
Okay.
Go ahead, everybody. We're pretty sure we're calling this MMA and stuff. Pretty much kind of. We didn't really figure out the full fucking diet. I want to change the name.
All right, take two.
No, I'm not doing take two at all. Damn it. Like, I don't know. I haven't really designed like a logo or anything, so. And we're going to be renaming the shit show. And there's your intro. Matt's going to take it away.
All right. So here we go. No shows this past weekend. Nothing major going on as far as actual events. But there's never a lack of news in the world of MMA. This week is no different. The preliminary numbers for UFC 207 have come in. That was obviously Nunes versus Rousey. Several outlets have claimed that the Friday night show did about 1.1 million buys. This would be the sixth most purchased UFC pay-per-view event ever, which sounds good, but it's even more impressive if you remember back that this was the Friday night show where Rousey did very little promotion to help hype the show. There was no grudge match factor in this. So it really was just based on Rousey's name and people being able to find it on a Friday night. So 1.1 million buys is a lot for this show. Many people presumed the show was going to kind of bomb like the last UFC Friday night pay-per-view. If you remember back, Brock Lesnar fought Alistair Overeem and only drew about 550,000 buys. So this show doubled it. With, you would say Nunes probably isn't as big as a name as Overeem. So Rousey did it with maybe even a weaker opponent on the same night, essentially. So what do you think this says about Ronda's drawing ability and the UFC's overall popularity at the moment?
I mean, it's obviously a coup for Ronda. The only real question is, would it have done bigger on a different Saturday night? But either way, it did over a million buys, so it was a gigantic success from that perspective. I think it says a lot about, I mean, it says a ton about Ronda. Because she singularly carried it. And like, in a way, even Conor doesn't singularly carry things. Like, at least he has people on the other side that are usually speaking English. Like, for this entire year, this mega run here, he's always had English-speaking trash talkers on the other side. So there's a little bit of, like, give and take and things of that nature. But what the fuck do you mean? Restart is required. Oh, Ryan, restart later. So, yeah, but Ronda did it. I mean, not only did she do it with an opponent that doesn't, you know, a gay Brazilian woman, like, doesn't speak English, she did it with herself not even speaking English. Like, she didn't do anything. So, like, for her to do that for just, like, zero press on the day before, I mean, day before New Year's Eve and all, I mean, there was a million reasons this thing could have failed, and that it didn't is just huge. I mean, I think it's also, you know, as a general rule, I think it just shows with the UFC, whereas if they've got the right star, they're now in a position where they're going to get, you know, real coverage. It's just a matter of keeping those stars happy and not giving away their interim championships or whatever.
If you had to guess, if there was like a grudge between Nunes and Rousey, you know, some water bottle throwing incident, or Ronda slapped her at the weigh-ins or something, and then the traditional promotion they normally do, and it was a Saturday night show, you think this thing's like 1.5, 1.6 million? You think it's that big of a difference?
I could see it being... I hate
like what do you lose on a Friday night? Like school vacation week and people have shit going on. You know?
The big thing with Friday night is one, just people aren't used to it. And so when people are like, hey, you want to watch UFC? Everybody's like, yeah, we come on Saturday. This Friday night, especially in particular, would be bad because Saturday night was New Year's Eve. So the whole group dynamic, people getting together and wanting to party, everybody's probably looking at going the next day going, no, dude, I got a party tomorrow. I can't do this two nights in a row, or like, I can't be out from my wife two nights in a row or some shit like that. It's only be a hindrance. It's not like it's helped her at all. I don't think anybody would say this is ideal. So if it's less than ideal, it's almost by definition, this is, I know it's tautological, but it's a hindrance. So, without all that, I don't know, my instinct would have just initially been, I think if there had been a grudge, I think a grudge in Ronda doing regular press would have been far more important than what night it's on. But, you know, you put it on the right night with a grudge and all that stuff, I think it's, you know, easily 1.5. But then again, maybe it'd only be 1.3 or 1.4, I don't know. But I think it would be more, but not like 2 million or anything like that.
Yeah. To me, my biggest takeaway with these numbers is that it probably means she's going to come back. You know, for a show with, you know, like we've said, and we're beating a dead horse here, but very little promotion, a Friday night, she did the sixth biggest buy rate in company history. She's going to come back. There's too much money on the table. Whether they put her in against Run Misha Tate again, give her Gina Carano, you could do a bunch of stuff with her where she could even be in position where she could maybe win the fight based on who they put in there with her. And it doesn't matter who they put in because it'll still draw. It'll still be a comeback. Even though she's lost two in a row, people will want to see, can she come back or is she going to get killed again? There's clearly an audience for her and she's still a draw. And the UFC, WME, IMG are still desperate to make money. They're going to bring her back, and they're going to make it worth her while. And to me, it just signifies that she's a huge star and they need her. If this thing did 500,000 buys, she'd be less likely to come back because there'd be less money and they'd be less less inclined to make her a good offer to get her back.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely, you know, important, whether she comes back or not. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if she wants to come back, it's going to be because she wants to do it. You know, I think that if they did that on 500,000 buys or a million buys, she'd still be getting just so much money that it wouldn't be like it's going to keep her from coming back if she really wants to. Like, if she doesn't want to come back, she's not coming back unless it'd have to be some super crazy figure. But even then, I don't know. She's never really shown that she's going to just take a payday. I do wonder about her drawing going forward because obviously she's a huge star and she'll draw, you know, against a milk bucket or whatever Ric Flair would do, a broomstick.
A milk bucket?
I don't know. I was thinking, whatever. A big pail. The big pail that you use when you milk a cow into the bucket.
Okay.
This is a milk bucket. Anyways, similarly kind of to what Connor has, although Connor's in a much better position, is that Ronda has no story going forward. Like, the story is going to be, what are people going to be paying to watch? Can she win a fight? Well, you can always just gimmick that. She's got no rival. Misha's gone as a rival. Holly was never really a rival or anything, and you can't be like, oh, she wants to avenge her only loss or anything like that. She's not going to fight for the title the next time because it would just be... I think it'd be really tough unless it's like a year from now and there's a totally new champion, maybe. But otherwise, like, when you're selling it to the public, it's really just going to be, hey, watch Ronda fight. Unless you can figure out, again, you bring up a Paige VanZant or somebody like that. You can figure out some way that the other opponent would resonate with the mainstream public. You know, Cyborg would probably, well, that's never going to happen now. So I don't even need to worry about that one. So, I mean, she'll be fine, but, you know, every time you lose, you lose a little bit of an aura. And if you're, especially if you're a fighter, like, you can lose a fight, but if you come back and win the next one, you're fine. But if you lose two in a row, that aura is definitely cracked. Now, you can still draw, you can still be popular and funny and all these things, but that once, you know, you don't get that, this guy is really special. It takes a long time for that to come back, especially if you lose two in a row. So I think Ronda's going to have some rebuilding to do and, you know, maybe get a new fucking coach to beat a real dead horse.
That is obvious. But I don't know. To me, it's like they're so desperate to make money right now. They're doing all these interim title fights. They're hot. I want to say they're hot-shotting fights, but, I mean, they basically are. To me, it's like they were talking about doing the Gina Carano fight a few years ago when Rousey was, like, unbeatable. Carano probably watches Rousey now and is like, maybe I've got a shot.
Carano might, you know, it would have sounded dumb a while ago, but if they fight at, say, 145, the way that, you know, Carano's always had solid takedown defense, and yes, Ronda's a freak, but Carano was a better striker than she was as good a striker as anybody, as either, you know, Nunez or Holly Holm, and she'd be bigger. All of a sudden, you look going, yeah, I mean, she's in shape, and who knows if she can do anymore. She's been in Hollywood long enough, but Carano might beat her, which would be crazy. Although that would be the one. I think if you did that, but that's it. If you do that fight, Ronda's done. Because now she's moved into freak show, almost Foxy Boxy type of stuff. Like, it would be a little too on the nose. Oh, look at the two pretty Hollywood girls fighting each other, and they're both really talented, but really, they're only good enough to fight each other. Like, what?
No, I mean, it's a gimmick fight, obviously, but it's all spin, man. I mean, I don't want to talk bad of, like, you know, casual fans or the general public, but they're not watching that close. But you play it up like it's two different generations, the top fighters from two different generations of whatever. You can say the last era and whatever, the era before it even. And you know what? It'll draw. It's all probably that Ronda, the commercial with Rousey walking around her house or someone's house or a stage, whatever that was. I didn't like that ad myself. But it apparently worked. They did 1.1 million buys on a Friday night against a no-name opponent. You know?
I absolutely – you put Carano and Ronda against each other. That thing's a million-plus with ease. I'm just saying that after that, like, that's it. That's killing your golden goose. I think that's when Ronda goes into the – you know, her next stop is fighting a man in Japan or something like that.
Yeah. I just don't think most people know. Do you know what I mean? Like, if she killed Carano, people would be like, all right, maybe she's back. Like, I don't think most people even get it. They've got all the Strikeforce? Yeah, Strikeforce footage. And they can air that stuff where she's winning some fights. You know what I mean? It's all, I don't know. Only time will tell, but I think they're going to be desperate to get her back, and she will come back because the offer will be too good. But that's just my gut feeling. In other big news for some people, it wasn't really big news for me, but maybe it was big news for you. Meryl Streep won the Lifetime Achievement Award at the Golden Globes on Saturday. During her speech, she basically dissed President-elect Donald Trump, criticized people who mock the disabled, and vouched for freedom of the press. To me, it was pretty uncontroversial, but it gained a lot of publicity and press. It was all over the place. The reason I bring this up, though, is because she mentioned MMA and said basically with Trump in office, there'd be less people from foreign countries in the United States, and acting would go away, and the only thing left over would be MMA and football, neither of which are an art. This got a lot of MMA fans upset and pissed off for whatever reason. Dana White responded and called Streep an uppity old lady who's not in his demographic. Like John Kavanaugh and I think Conor McGregor were talking about it. So this got a lot of press in the MMA bubble. For most, like, normal people who don't live and die with MMA, They were more like, oh, geez, Meryl Streep gave this speech about freedom of the press and not mocking the disabled.
Actually, you know what? I have a feeling that this got a lot more outside of the bubble press because I saw it on Drudge Report today. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, because if something's on Drudge, it's, you know, not that anybody's going to really give a shit, but somebody will have seen it. That's my
Was it more about the MMA aspect?
Yeah, it was specifically MMA fighters respond to Meryl Streep.
Yeah, I didn't see it that way. I saw it a lot on like people like not retweeting it, but sharing it on Facebook and like it. I guess it depends who your friends are, but that's how I saw it most of the time. But did you see the speech?
No.
Any of it? You never even bothered.
I didn't even watch the clips the first thing and saying it. I read the transcript. I'm like, okay. Like I'm literally have zero interest in Meryl Streep getting a lifetime achievement at the Golden Globes. Like,
I wasn't watching it like live. I wasn't like, oh, good. I'm so excited for Meryl Streep's lifetime achievement award. I get to see this. But just all the hoopla around it. It was a big deal.
I guess I just like when I read what she said. I'm just like, okay. I don't care what Meryl Streep has to say about anything, really. If she doesn't like MMA, like, okay, I'm going to move on with my life. I think she's, you know, I think her sin, the greatest sin she really seems to have committed is she wants to call MMA basically kind of like low class, which was a kind of her implication. First of all, I'm like, I think it just shows that she's just really detached because you can tell people, all you're going to have is the NFL and UFC. People are going to be like, fuck, that's my entire fucking weekend. Like, what do you, okay, like, do you remember when the Super Bowl happened and everybody watches it? You remember how nobody watches the Golden Globes, Meryl? Like, there's a lot of people who just be like, okay, I got football? Really? College and pro and cage fighting. And I work during the week, so it doesn't matter. Like, okay, fine. And then, you know, just the general arrogance of, like, literally telling people, if you didn't have me and my friends up here in your life would be meaningless. Like, if you didn't have us artists entertaining you, you people would just be so unhappy. I'm like, okay, it's fine if somebody else says that, but don't, like, say that about yourself. You don't go out there and brag like, hey, if it wasn't for me, you'd be so alone and crying and boring. It's like, we have books and stuff, but I don't know. If she doesn't like MMA, it's fine. I think that somebody wrote it for her. I think that she purposely used the word mixed martial arts so she could play off the arts and the cutesy little, but that's not really art. It's like, okay, whatever, and who gives a shit? Fuck, whatever, it's fucking, I saw, you know, I'm sure this got hurt a lot by people because, you know, everybody gave a shit because Donald Trump has not learned that if you don't respond, it goes away, that the moment you respond, it becomes a story that dominates the headlines for a long time. If he had said nothing in response, nobody would have given a crap. People would have just been like, oh, she said something that the things, and some pundits would have talked about it on CNN or whatever, and like a date later be gone. Instead, it's everywhere because Trump just couldn't help himself and that overrated actress that she is.
He has a tendency to like to get the last word in, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I've noticed that. But, I mean, to me it was not offensive because I think MMA fans can get caught up in it. And the bottom line to me is most people don't like MMA. What is it, the sixth or seventh most popular sport in the country? It's like people forget, like, yeah, the Super Bowl is a big deal, but only half the country watches it. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's huge. It's the biggest thing in TV. But again, half people don't even watch it. So am I offended if somebody doesn't like MMA? No. It's like I realize most people don't watch it. Like the biggest show in UFC history did 1.6 million buys. There's 375 million people in this country, you know? And I think people lose sight of that.
I've always basically said, like, I understand why people don't want to watch fighting. Like,
right.
Okay, I kind of, like, I intellectually understand it in my gut, deep in my heart. I don't really understand it. I think there's something wrong with everybody. But, yeah, I mean, somebody doesn't want to watch people fighting. Okay, like, you're my mom or somebody. You go to Bible study. You want to watch cage fighting. That's fine. I mean, anybody getting put off by that, fuck off. like I said, I thought it was probably more offensive to her just, you know, be talking about how great and wonderful she and all her Hollywood friends are, but whatever.
Yeah.
Like, she got a Lifetime Achievement Award, and I don't know why she has to then stand in front of everybody and go, by the way, I have all these Oscars. Everybody loves me. I just got a Lifetime Achievement Award, but I want you to remember I'm really important. Everybody remember I'm important. It's like, but you just got a Lifetime Achievement Award. There's your validation. Stop looking for it.
Yeah, I think – I don't know. Is it – because there's two parts of it for me. One is like you have this opportunity to say something that you think is important and can help or whatever. Whether your convictions aren't all there or you don't have all the facts, sometimes you look at it like, you know, I've got a chance to do something to maybe help people or make a point. But a lot of times, like public figures, whether they're athletes or actors or whatever – they don't want to hear you talk about politics. Like, it can turn off half your audience, because if you go the wrong way, you know, it's a weird situation.
There's a famous quote from the greatest, you know, famous person, spokesperson of all time, Michael Jordan. When somebody asked him what's about a political question, he kind of dodged. He goes, "Republicans buy shoes too." And it's like he understood, like, but you know what? I don't begrudge her saying what she wanted to say about Trump. Fine, whatever. I was going to say she's got the stage. She can say it whenever she wants. She's got the big audience. I'm used to this, just how it is. Like, celebrities are just like all the rest of us, just uninformed morons. And they're on TV, so we hear their opinion. But it's really just like you just heard like your dumbass uncle's opinion on TV once the other day. You're like, oh, okay. It's like you're in the same dumb shit. It doesn't matter. I don't know. I can't even begrudge her speaking out. Like, I'm just so used to it now. I'm just like, okay, they're just going to do it. Okay. If it's going to happen and I can't stop it, all right. That's whatever. My world has zero connectivity with Meryl Streep, so... or most of Hollywood. So I don't care.
Okay, just the definition of art is the expression or application. Listen, just hear me out. The expression or application of human creative skill and imagination, typically in a visual form such as painting or sculpture, producing works to be appreciated primarily for their beauty or emotional power. Dana White is convinced MMA is an art. Would you agree or disagree with his assessment?
I would disagree when you watch it live. I could agree after the fact. Like, you know, when you're watching it live, you're watching a sport. It's not art. The competitors are, some guys go in there and try to just, you know, sling leather and bang. But for the most part, guys are trying to win the contest. As much as it's a fight, it is also just a sport. And sport is not art. Sport is sport. That's the difference. After the fact, if you want to, you know, just like anything can become art after the fact, you know, a beautiful catch in baseball, a photograph, Muhammad Ali saying, you know, get up, no one's going to believe that. Like, these things can become art, but again, that's just kind of a bullshit run around that anything could become art, but is it art as it's being created? No. When you're painting something, you're making art as you do it. When you're MMA, it's happening. Now, pro wrestling, that can be considered art because it's two people deliberately creating something for the external enjoyment of people. But in MMA, you know, again, yeah, maybe you want people to like you, but you're, at the end of the day, if 20,000 people hate you but you win the fight, that's your job. It's like, again, like in baseball, it doesn't matter if you're the Cubs, if you're playing in Cleveland, you want to win the World Series. You don't really care if the Cleveland fans are going to go home disappointed. Oh, well, you're a baseball player. Your job is to win.
I'm with you. I don't really consider it art either, even though I know nothing about real art. I wouldn't consider sport really art. I mean, a picture of, like, somebody out in a field painting something on a canvas. But that's just me. So, yeah, Meryl Streep did not upset me either. She's entitled to her opinion, and it wasn't anything real controversial to get your – panties in a bunch, would that be appropriate? Yeah, I guess.
That's cisgendered. That's the microaggression. You're violating the safe space that we built here.
I apologize. I didn't mean to make you uncomfortable.
It's not just me. I speak that's heteronormative that you assume I'm speaking for myself. I could be speaking for other people as well who listen. I can be, you know, open-minded and being protective of our very sensitive audience who just can't sustain. They need a little bit of protection. They want to create a more perfect world, and we're giving it to them.
All right, we can just edit out, like, edit that out and put in a smoking commercial or something.
You fag! All right.
How about something, I know you're not really good with art, but you might be better with law. Mark Hunt filed a civil suit in U.S. District Court on Tuesday morning. Yeah, I can tell. He named Brock Lesnar, Dana White, and the UFC's parent company, Zuffa LLC, as defendants. He is seeking damages in the millions for the controversy surrounding Lesnar's two failed drug tests going into UFC 200. The suit alleges racketeering, fraud, negligence, and breach of contract among 8 charges levied by Hunt. Hunt also claims that he will still be fighting over Overeem at UFC 209. Knowing what you know, what are your thoughts on the lawsuit?
I don't think it's going to be successful. I think he is.
Do you think any aspect of it, of the eight charges or whatever, does one have a better chance than another, or are they all hopeless?
They're all just basically, the UFC is letting people cheat. That's, you know, they all come down to some variation of that. And so, like, you know, a judge is really just going to look at it probably and go, if you're an athlete and you know the rules, and the rules are, and they obeyed the rules. Not only did they obey the rules, the UFC obeyed the law. So unless Mark Hunt has actual proof that the UFC is deliberately protecting guys, which then you'd have a fine cause of action. And I guess they're kind of claiming that in the possible roundabout way of the UFC using the crazy circumstances deal to let Brock fight on 4 weeks' notice instead of 4 months. But I think that, you know, if that goes to any arbitrator or anybody, they're going to look at it and go, yeah, but this really is crazy circumstances. Like, this is the biggest show ever. Like, they can make a solid case for why Brock needed an exception that Angela Hill apparently does not. Damn it. So, yeah, I mean, but otherwise, I think that there's everybody looking and go, yeah, we know. What he did is wrong. What he did was against the law. So it's up to the state's attorney to bring that charge that they want to. And otherwise, like, you know, you knew what the rules were when you agreed to the bout. You don't get to afterwards say, all right, hey, he cheated. I want all of his purse. Like, no, the rule is you get 20%, and then he gets fined or suspended for however long an independent agency decrees. Like, he's being punished. Like, Mark Hunt's got this line, like, you know, this is what we're teaching people. Like, when you do something wrong, you don't get punished. It's like, no, he's losing $250,000 in a year. Like, that's, you know, in theory, he could be losing several million dollars that he may if he had fought again. So, you know, he's being punished. He's doing the time that everybody agreed to, including Mark Hunt. If Hunt didn't like it, he could do what he claimed is doing. I don't know if it's actually going through with Overeem, where he said, I won't fight unless that guy has to agree to give me all of his purse. Then you could be like, fine, you know, you have something different. But he didn't say that with Brock. He accepted the fight knowing what the deal was. So, you know, piss off. You fought Brock Lesnar. You thought the dude was on steroids? Like, really? You know what you're getting into. Piss off.
Do you think this could open a can of worms for the UFC and lead to more fighters doing similar things? Or do you think Hunt loses this and it kind of goes away forever? Will it change anything?
No, because the only people that would ever really have a chance to do something like this are people at Hunt's level. The Conor McGregors and all that are never going to do it because they get way too much money from the UFC. They're way too in bed with them. Well, Conor could because he's a little nuts, but most of the top level guys, like, they're so in bed with the UFC, they're not going to rock the boat. And sadly, the guys in the lower end of the spectrum, you know, what if you're like a 10-10 guy and you lose to a guy that is a 20-20? You're going to sue the UFC and demand, you know, that guy's $20,000. Like, you're going to burn your bridge with the company over $20,000. Nah, it's kind of like, you know, like any business really almost like that. You know, the worker dudes, if you don't have a union, you ain't got any power. And you see it. You know, the guys at the bottom, they got to play ball because they're all hoping that one day there'll be a guy at the top who also plays ball because he's a guy at the top. So it's a nice little hamster wheel they got going.
Yeah, I mean, how do you think this all ends for Hunt? Is he even going to be on the UFC 209 card? Do you think they're going to release him? Like, how do you still work for a company that you're suing?
It's going to be a real tough one. I think if I'm Hunt's lawyer, I'm going, like, you can tell the guy, like, legally, yes, he has the right to fight and all this stuff. But it will definitely look kind of awkward. It just doesn't paint the full picture, especially if he's looking for, you know, special damages or something like that. I think to succeed with this, he's going to really need, I'll say a favorable judgment. He's going to need somebody kind of being really sympathetic to him and giving him a shot. And if he does things like this, it's just going to, I think it does kind of undermine it a little bit. Other than that, it's kind of like I know the UFC won't do anything to him explicitly, but it's kind of one of those weird things where it's like, usually if something like this happens, everybody's like, everybody on both sides agrees. Yeah, okay, we're just going to back off. Like, you won't fight. We won't talk shit about you or something like that. So I don't know. It's just bizarre. It's really bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, the weirdest thing out of all of it was, like, the fraud charges and the racketeering. I mean, obviously I'm not real familiar with that stuff, but it sounded like he was almost playing it up like it was this conspiracy. But he, like you said, he knew the deal going in. It wasn't like he thought Lesnar was having the 4 months of testing beforehand. He knew the fight was signed a few weeks before. To me, I mean, he did get screwed over. He fought a guy who failed a drug test a week and a half before the fight, and nothing was done. The results didn't come in time. Like, I get his anger and frustration with this situation. He fought two other guys while he's been in the UFC who were doping as well. And it didn't come out till after the fight with Bigfoot and Mir. So I understand his mindset. But at the same time, in this case, he kind of knew, like, some of the charges that they're bringing forth just seem like he already knew about him. Like the fraud and that whole aspect of the case seems like it's going to be tough to prove since he took the fight.
Yeah, I mean, the fraud aspect, I mean, if they can actually prove that the UFC was in collusion, I think that him taking the fight would probably be nullified. If they could really show that the UFC was truly colluding behind the scenes in a conspiracy, like, that'd be, I mean, look, if there's any chance that happens, then the UFC is going to just immediately settle the lawsuit. They're not going to want any of that to have a chance to ever come out. And since the UFC probably won't, probably tell me that there's nothing like that to be worried about. I don't know who drafted the lawsuit. I don't know if it was filed in New Zealand. No, it was filed in the United States, but like, the term racketeering is usually, it's a criminal term. It doesn't really come up in civil law. Like, I had to look it up. I'm like, we don't say racketeering. You know, it's possible that the whatever state they did it, probably Nevada, I'm guessing, maybe they call it racketeering. It would really be a civil conspiracy. But racketeering, you know, that's what the mob gets charged with, the RICO charges. You know, it's literally a conspiracy to commit a crime. And it's almost an impossible thing to prove, even if you've got, like, a decent chance. And this is really going to be, I mean, you're basically going to have to prove the UFC and Nevada and Brock Lesnar and USADA all agreed to some massive conspiracy to fuck over Mark Hunt.
It seems tough to prove.
Yeah. Although if he pulls it off, more power to him. His lawyer will get a lot of business.
Moving on to another subject that's probably near and dear to your heart. The Nevada Athletic Commission is going to discuss the removal of marijuana from the banned substance list on Friday. There's not going to be a vote or anything, but essentially what happened was in this past election, Nevada passed a law making recreational marijuana legal in the state. So Nevada's saying, well, if it's legal in the state, why would we ban it from, you know, athletic competitions? So essentially, at this time, marijuana and its metabolites are prohibited under NAC rules in competition over a threshold of 150 nanograms. And then I guess the area where this gets a little weird is with USADA, because it's still going to be an issue with USADA, so fighters can still get in trouble for smoking weed in competition. But Nevada seems like they're considering saying weed's okay now after suspending Nick Diaz for his entire career a couple years ago.
Oh, boy. I hope Nick Diaz is like, if this goes down, just goes up to Pat Lundvall, just blows a big old puff of weed smoke in her face. I sound like a moron there. I don't know what the hell they're talking about with this. I mean, look, whatever happens, if it goes through successfully, I guarantee you there's going to be a fucking rush of fighters in California going, hey, what about us? Because California just legalized it as well. It's funny that they'd want to push this through so quick, given that, while recreational marijuana is, in theory, legal in Nevada as of now, there's nobody can sell it recreationally. So if you're possessing it, they haven't set up the things. Anyway, I don't know. Just like I said, it makes no sense because they weren't. I don't think they're testing for it out of competition to the extent that they do. And I mean, in competition, they're still not going to let a dude go out there stoned. It's just not going to happen. Same way that they don't let you go out there drunk for your safety, right, and as an advantage. Like, some guys could definitely perform better stoned. Same shit. If you're drunk, you're gonna not feel pain. I mean, there's a trade-off, but you know, again, so I mean, 150 was always used because that was basically like, okay, you were high that day, but you know, the way metabolites work in your system with marijuana, it's so weird. So maybe they'll just have to go by an old-fashioned, just like kind of eye test. I don't know, like where they won't test it, but if they suspect. Like, if they come to your dressing room before the fight and it just smells like ice, you know, Ice Cube and Snoop Dogg's porch, there's a white guy reference, then maybe they do something. I don't know. It's just kind of, I guess they're just not going to test for it at all. And if guys want to go out there high, they can, because you can take an edible and let it kick in. I don't know. It's just, I don't know what the point is.
Yeah, to me, the one bit of logic is it's legal in our state, just in general. Why are we going to ban it? Because I'm not 100% sure on this, but I want to say, like, if you test within in competition, whatever that window is, if you test positive for weed, you're suspended or whatever. And the in competition times have changed over the years, so I'm not totally up to date on that. But it's legal in the state, so why are we going to say you can't use it? To me, if anything, it would probably be like the pre-fight physical where they say, you know, touch your nose or whatever sort of crap they put you through. Not like a – sort of like a sobriety test, I guess, would be how they determine it. But again, whether Nevada passes it or not doesn't matter because USADA is still the issue. Even if all 50 states said weed was okay in competition, USADA and WADA would still have to sign off on it because ultimately they're the ones that are implementing all this testing and everything, and they've kind of got the final say in it. In a few years, could something change? Yeah, but right now, even if Nevada says it's okay, it's still not if you're a UFC fighter. However, if you were a Bellator fighter, it would be okay because they don't follow the WADA guidelines anyway.
Although they don't really run in Nevada either.
That's true.
You know, they have to make sure Connecticut did it, I think, or parts or Northern Ireland lately.
Tel Aviv.
That was fucking weird. I was glad I kind of watched because that was a hell of an environment. It's like, wow, I'm watching fucking fights in Israel.
Then I saw and no one died.
Barely. I mean, shit, I was watching something the other day, and they were showing, like, some special about the border. Like, you always hear about, like, this shit happened, Israel-Palestine, the border, and all this stuff. But, like, they're just, like, right there. They're like, yeah, 100 yards over there, that's where the border is. That's where all the bombs are. And, like, they're mid-sentence, just a bomb goes off. They're like, oh, yeah, that just happened. So I'm like, what the fuck is... Who just lives like that? Like...
Yeah.
I mean, I know I live in Chicago, and... Like, I wake up and, you know, the weekend, 15 people murdered over the weekend. I'm like, I don't know, okay, whatever. And everyone else is like, holy shit, that's a lot. I'm like, I don't know, I guess. But, I don't know where I started with all this.
I don't know. But bottom line is, if you're a proponent of, legalizing the old weed, this is probably a step in the right direction. Although, if you're in the UFC, it's going to come down to what USADA and the UFC decide is kosher.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, on the one hand, I would think, you know, if Nevada does it, it's just going to be a domino. Just like how, you know, usually, like, all these things happen, like the whole early weigh-in thing. You know, one state did it, right. Everybody else went, boom, we all do it. I think marijuana is legal to some degree in Jersey. But, you know, they all just go, fine, it's done, it's over. But... USADA doesn't really have that. I mean, USADA, different sports have different drugs that are outlawed in USADA and WADA. I actually think like snowboarding and stuff, like even the Olympics, marijuana is not illegal because they really they would never be able to have anybody compete, I guess. But I think it's true. But so anyways, I guess in theory they could say yes or fine for fighting. You're no longer going to have marijuana illegal, but they govern so many other sports that are also similar. Like, you know, again, like think of wrestling or taekwondo or something like that, where, you know, they're contact sports. They're governed only, they're only at the mercy of USADA and WADA as far as testing is concerned. And, you know, it's going to kind of be like, well, maybe those people are in states that don't have it, and it's been deemed illegal by USADA, independent of Nevada, and everybody's rhyming in their ahs for effect, but it's kind of, they'll just stop. Maybe the USADA will just, I don't know, they don't fucking do too much early test. Let's just see what happens. I don't care.
Yeah, okay. I'm with you. I agree. I mean, right now, recreational marijuana is legal in 8 states. Interesting, none of them are the flyover states, but medical marijuana is legalized in, I don't even know, probably 20.
I think it's 26, yeah. Or something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, it looks like legalization everywhere is going to move forward, but, you know, some states take a little longer to get on board with things than others. So, I mean, down the road, yeah, it looks like that's the direction American society right now is headed, which is fine. I don't care. But, it's a question of when it'll be okay with USADA and the UFC. That's the bottom line. Moving along, the World MMA Awards announced their nominees for their 2016 awards this week. One nominee caught my eye in particular. In the Journalist of the Year category, Ariel Helwani, along with Sean Alshadi, Brett Okamoto, Ben Folks, and Kareem Zidane were nominated. Out of those, you know, 5 gentlemen, Helwani seemed like the oddest choice to me this year, considering he admitted to being a paid Zuffa employee this year. Do you think you can be nominated for Journalist of the Year when you were on the payroll of the company that you're supposed to be reporting on?
Well, you know, that's an ethical question that says no, 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 you can't do that. It'd be like, you know, somebody being... you know, the Associated Press Journalist of the Year, and it turns out that they were writing speeches for Trump on the side. You'd be like, no, you can't do that. Like, that's just weird. I mean, even if Helwani was independent in most of his dealings and what he had wasn't, you know, totally corrupting him, it doesn't, like all things in life, it doesn't really matter. I mean, you see, like, the other people nominated, Brett Okamoto, he's on ESPN a little bit here and there. anybody remember, name a thing he's ever really done. You know, maybe they'll break certain types of stories, but they're usually just because they're a big outlet and UFC hands it to them. You don't see any great writing. I mean, say what you will about Jeremy Botter, and there's a lot to say out there. At least he could claim that he broke the UFC sale story. Like, that's a real thing. You know.
Yeah, but I would even – Rovell from ESPN kind of broke that story. I wouldn't even say Botter broke that.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, people say that, but he didn't really. The story was already out there. There were rumors of it. He had more details, and he knew that it wasn't whatever the Chinese – I say Panda Energy for some reason, but the whatever the Chinese company was, Wanda or whatever it might have been. But he got that part right. That was new news at the time, but he didn't break that story.
Yeah, plus it turns out they weren't even the people that bought it. It's WMEI 97.8. Like, so I don't know, but at least it's something. I don't know, like,
right, no, I get what you're saying.
Like, somebody, but, like, setting aside the obvious that Havgarder should be nominated for something. I can joke about that, but fuck this shit. The past, like, 24 months or 18 months or whatever the thing been around, we've done more stuff that's, like, kind of like, oh, what the hell, than a lot of people have, so fuck you, MMA junkie. I don't know. A lot of these guys, they don't. The fact that nobody you could really name off the top of your head immediately just says that they're all just kind of regurgitating the same thing, and there's not a lot of news because it's a sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a question of what truly is journalism. How do you define that? What is it? To me, Helwani's a good interviewer. I don't really consider him a journalist who's out in the trenches like Woodward and Bernstein and trying to get sources. And yeah, he broke the Lesnar story and got in trouble for it, but that was a fight announcement. Was that like a groundbreaking investigative reporting? No.
I mean, hell, I had been hinting at that, and I knew that Brock was there, talk of him coming back at UFC 200, like 2 months or whatever before Helwani said anything. So it wasn't like, and I was just told that, and I got kind of half off the record. Well, obviously off the record, otherwise I would have said something. But, you know, again, if I knew, you know, it's not like it's that big of a huge story. Again, somebody just fed, he was fed the information, just like I was fed the information. If you're fed information and that's your big story, that's not investigating. That's not reporting. You know, anybody could do that. Woodward and Bernstein found stuff. It wasn't like Nixon called them up and was like, hey, you guys want these tapes I've got? I think you might want to listen to this. And,
yeah, I mean, the whole thing to me is kind of a joke because it's the World MMA Awards, which means nothing. It's more probably a popularity contest than anything. Helwani's won the thing in the last 5 years. But it's like, if he wins it again this year, it's like, come on. Like, he was getting checks from the company he covers.
And then he, like, cried when he didn't get his press pass for one fight. And part of the reason was, he was sad that he wasn't there to witness Michael Bisping's moment, which, again, is showing bias.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, whatever. It's like all sports media is garbage.
Right.
MMA is really no better.
I'm with you. It's just kind of funny, I guess, would be the best way to describe it. A bunch of new fights announced recently. We have Tyron Woodley versus Wonderboy Thompson, number 2, coming up at UFC 209 in Las Vegas on March 4th for the welterweight title. For me personally, I would have preferred Maya getting the shot against Woodley instead. Any thoughts on Woodley Thompson 2?
I would, you know, I want to see Maya get it, but I mean, I've just kind of since the very moment that they stopped fucking up the scorecards at UFC 205, like the moment it was a majority draw, I'm like, just in my world, it's always going to be a rematch. It was a close fight. It was a good fight and went to a draw. Like, these are just things that get rematched. And it's not like Maya is some mega draw. They're like, okay, good, we got this guy out of the way. Like, no, you got to draw with the champion and you put on a hell of a fight. Yeah. In my mind, this was like always just a formality. I know that Woodley wanted to try to talk shit and was like, oh, I'm going to fight this. And then like 2 hours later, yeah, the fight's been announced. It's like, oh, dude, I don't know, get your PR people on the same page or something like that. You're kind of bipolar.
UFC 208 in Brooklyn on February 11th has a new fight added to the card just in the last couple days. Ronaldo Jacare Sosa versus Tim Bosch. Kind of a weird fight for Sosa to, you know, just take. Bosch isn't really, I mean, maybe he's a top 10 guy, but I'd have to look and make sure. I'm guessing he's maybe top 15 is more likely. But Sosa's like right there for a title shot at middleweight, so kind of an odd fight for him to take. Probably a safe fight. I mean, Bosch is a heavy hitter. He could get rocked, but Sosa would have to be the heavy favorite, right?
Is Jacare coming off a loss?
No.
No, okay, he's always on win streak there. And, you know, I know
his last fight was Belfort, right?
Yeah, it might have been. Yeah, so this is really, I mean, I know he's supposed to fight Rockhold and they fell through. But, yeah, I mean, Bosch, this says to me, this is the kind of fight where a guy is just like, I need to stay active. He just doesn't want, like, he wants to fight, and it's not about money. I mean, maybe he needs money, but in all likelihood, this is I need to stay active. I don't want to be too rusty, and I know I need to fight somebody good. And the truth is, you know, if you're going to be champion of the world, you should be able to beat Tim Bosch. If you can't do it, then you're probably not going to be champion of the world. So it's odd, but I don't know. I'll take it because actually, I kind of looked at that card today, and there's some actually really good, entertaining, like, looking fights in there. I mean, nothing as far as name is concerned. This is a joke of a show name-wise, but entertainment-wise, not that bad.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It's okay. It's okay.
Well, there's Joe Lozon's got a good fight, and Jim Miller's got a good fight, and
Lozon's fighting this weekend. He's not on 208.
Oh, fuck me. Well, Jim Miller's got somebody he's fighting.
He does. Poirier.
Yeah, Poirier and Miller. I'm like, I don't know, like, I just, like, when I saw the fight, I'm like, that sounds like a really good fight, and I didn't even know it was happening. So I'm like, yeah. Right. And there's some, you know, Wilson Hayes' fight. I don't know. Wilson Hayes, now that's a weird one.
He was supposed to get a title shot.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Back in August, and then Mighty Mouse got hurt, and so Mighty Mouse did the show. And now Wilson Hayes is fighting on, like, the undercard of a Holly Holm fight. Like, I guess, again, maybe it's just a case of I need to stay active, but you would think, like, with no real clear-cut dude at 125 for Mighty Mouse anyways, he'd be right there. You'd just go, well, okay, I'll just wait, get my shot a couple months, unless he must have been told it's going to be longer or something. I don't know.
Yeah. It seems like you shouldn't even say buzz when it comes to a flyweight title shot, but most people seem to be thinking it's going to be Benavidez for the third time. Whether or not that happens, I don't know. Just coming off that win, off that show where both of them fought, it kind of looked like that was the direction they were going. But
yay.
We'll see. Yeah. In other fight news, Marlos Kunin versus Julia Budd has been announced for Bellator's show on March 3rd in Thackerville, Oklahoma. The reason I bring this fight up is because it's for the inaugural Bellator featherweight women's title, which is kind of amusing since the UFC is doing the same thing a month earlier. Does Bellator really need a featherweight women's champion at the moment?
To be honest, I'm sure when they had the idea for this initially, I would have been totally in support of it. I think it would have been a really good idea. Except for now the UFC's got one, there is just zero talent out there. Like, before, they could have maybe had, you know, it would have been something to set them apart. The UFC, they could do like 125, 145, and let UFC 115, 135. Sure. At least for a while. Like, I always thought that, you know, back in the day, Strikeforce should have tried to just take over WEC. Because, so, you know, you just offer something where you're a little different. But, I mean, I like Marlos Kunin. I think she's one of the top featherweights out there. And I mean, the fight's okay, but, I mean, honestly, this Friday, Megan Anderson's fight for the interim. Yeah, I know, but I think it'll probably be the real title, because I think the Cyborg holds the real one. So
she does.
Yeah. So you know, I don't see that fight as more of, you know, most, like, legitimate as far as, like, who's gonna be the number one guy and the girl in the world at 145. Even over Holly Holm and Duraname. I mean, Holm and Duraname is 2 135ers. One of them has lost two in a row fighting for the title. At least I know Megan Anderson is a real 145-pound female fighter.
Right. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. That division is just so thin. To think that there's like three champions, like, it's like super heavyweight for men. It's like, how do you need three super heavyweight men's champions? No, you don't need three women's 145 pound. It's like Bellator should just do a 135 pound because there's more women in that weight class and be a deeper talent pool.
Yeah, I mean, again, the reason I'll give them a little bit of a pass is I'm sure they were working on this before the UFC probably put together their idea. Yeah, I mean, and now you've gone for it, you're kind of stuck. They kind of got to do it. But, yeah. I mean, I think if you combine all the 145ers out there, you know, some of the 35ers going up, a division of Holm, Duraname, Carmelo's Kunin, Megan Anderson, you know, if she ever came back, Cyborg, that actually wouldn't be the worst division. Like, you could probably do 10, but you really, that's stretching that thin for one organization, let alone spreading it out over three. And I'm sure the Bellator is just going to be bringing in a lot of Japanese chicks because that's just what they do. Mm. And so,
or Russian. Russian, too.
Yeah, that's true. They can find some Russian chick. They grow big there, so who knows?
The one thing I've secretly been looking forward to is the UFC rankings, the top 15 women featherweight fighters once they actually get the division going. Like, it's going to take them a year to even have 15 fighters in the division. Like, what the hell are they going to do?
Yeah, it'll probably be a year before you see a total of 15 fighters on TV in the UFC.
Like, any woman who fights in that division will be ranked. Like, you can say some just get hired by the UFC and fight once at 145, and you can say, I was a ranked fighter in the UFC. Couple other fights that we probably shouldn't bother talking about, but this is just what I do. There is a Chris Brown versus Soulja Boy fight coming up in a boxing match. The fight will be three rounds on pay-per-view in March and is being promoted by Floyd Mayweather, who made news for another reason today, which we'll get to in a minute.
Wait, that's real?
Yes. Mayweather is actually training Soulja Boy, and Mike Tyson is working with Chris Brown.
What?
Obviously, you thought this was fake.
I thought it was some sort of, like, joke. Or, you know, like, these two rappers had, like, some sort of fake beef and, like, oh, you know, Floyd Mayweather's training them. They're going to fight on pay-per-view?
That is my understanding. Last I knew, as of this morning, no one has pulled out of the fight or failed a PED test yet.
When is the pay-per-view?
I saw March. I don't know if there's a date yet, but honestly, they were talking March.
If this happens, I'm buying that fucking thing. It's so absurd. Like,
Are you familiar with both of them? I know you're not the biggest hip hop connoisseur.
Chris Brown's the douchebag that beat the shit out of Rihanna, so fuck him. And the other guy, I've heard the name. Soulja Boy.
He's really dropped off in the last few years. He was kind of like a short-lived bad.
Yeah, I feel like he was from, like, Atlanta or the South or something.
He's from the South, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, it kind of, like, I guess you could probably figure that from the Soulja part. But
he spells it S-O-U-L-J-A.
Oh, yeah, Soulja.
Yeah, it's clever.
He's
better than anything we come up with.
He's a wordsmith is what he is. No, we come up with the good stuff. It's somebody who came up with it first. It's such a random thing because in my world, like, again, I know Chris Brown. Like, Chris Brown to me is still, like, he's, like, a much bigger star. And, like, these guys, you know, I know these morons have this shit talking all the time in the press, but, like, they're going to actually box each other? Like, this is something that's, it seems like it's got to be a work. Because, like, if you really hated the other guy, like, most people that really hate somebody don't want to fight them. Certainly not in public where, you know, if they lose, it's going to be embarrassing. Are they? Maybe they're just both really, really hard up for cash, or just incredibly delusional. I don't know. Whatever it is, whatever the reasons are, something is that was fascinating. I don't know, watching two guys who are.
It's like celebrity boxing on Fox.
It really is. Except for, yeah, it really is. except they're going to charge money. And something about them charging money makes me want to see it more. Because I feel like, I feel like I'll be one of like 15 people that say that they saw that show.
More people will buy this show than 15. I can guarantee you that. But so I got some info for you from everyone's favorite credible news site, TMZ. They seem to get things right more often than some other news sources, but let's not go down that path. So sources connected with both Chris and Soulja tell TMZ they genuinely dislike each other and each wants to beat the crap out of the other. But they want more than anything is a huge paycheck by running the fight on pay-per-view. The initial plan was for a Vegas fight, but we've learned there are several rules and regulations that would make such a fight impossible there, not the least of which is a mandatory drug test for amateur fights. Both Chris and Soulja know they would never pass.
It's not even in Vegas. That's even better.
We're told the plan is to take the fight overseas, with the first choice being Dubai. And they believe the pay-per-view audience would rake in untold millions of dollars. Both Chris and Soulja have talked about making this a charity fight, but we're told some of the money will also line their pockets.
Holy shit, it gets even better. They're going to be doing – it's like the fucking – the greatest MMA show of all time, the Bodog show in St. Petersburg when they had Jean-Claude Van Damme and Vladimir Putin in attendance. Like, adding Dubai into this, that's genius. It hadn't occurred to me that you wouldn't do this in the States. No, they're going to go overseas in Dubai and do it. Oh, it's going to be on, it's going to be really early in the morning. Oh, that's going to be fabulous. I'm going to wake up at 7 a.m. and pay $50 to watch these two morons beat each other up in the middle of the fucking Middle East. Like, what the shit?
Yeah, it's it'll be interesting. I mean, I wonder when it would air over here. Because I was under the impression Mayweather was the promoter. Like, I read that somewhere. And again, I don't know these websites I'm getting this from, how accurate they are. But it's something else. It'll be interesting to see if people buy it. I mean, Chris Brown's a pretty famous dude. And Soulja Boy was a pretty famous guy, you know, 8-9 years ago. I'm picking Chris Brown in the fight. He seems a little tougher than Soulja Boy. Soulja Boy is very scrawny. He needs to put on some muscle.
We've also seen what Chris Brown can do in a fight. I mean, right. You know, we've got
evidence. Some damage.
Yeah, so, good gosh, this is so fucking stupid. So stupid. It's like, in the Mayweather in one corner, Tyson in the other, like, that's just like, it's just fucking bizarre. This really feels like something right out of New Year's Eve Japan. That's what this is. It's New Year's Eve Japan. That's when this should be taking place.
A little bit, yeah. Speaking of ridiculous fights, Floyd Mayweather was on, I don't even know, First Take or one of those sports TV talk shows today. And he said he's only going to come back to boxing if he gets the McGregor fight. He said, I'm a businessman and it makes more business sense. The only thing that I'm interested in is probably the McGregor fight. He went on to say they've already offered him $15 million and they want to make the fight happen. So again, Mayweather's in the press, making more news about the McGregor fight, keeping his name out there. I still see no chance of the fight happening. Unless everybody decides there's just too much money on the line and everybody decides it's good for all of them. But I don't see Dana White and Ari Emanuel really negotiating very well with Floyd Mayweather and what's his name, Leonard Ellerby or whatever that crew is. I don't see those negotiations going real smoothly, but it's still making news. It's still getting clicks. It's still generating ratings, I guess. So they're going to keep milking that cow and filling up that milk bucket.
It's funny. It's kind of like a win-win for everybody in that no one expects this fight to actually happen. So they don't have to worry about that. But from Floyd's perspective, he gets to leech on to the biggest combat sports star that's active right now and kind of keep his name relevant for whatever reasons he wants to keep his name out there. Floyd Mayweather, he's an egomaniac, so fine. He wants to be relevant. This allows him to be relevant. For Connor, it works because it keeps his name out there in the press when he's not even doing anything. He's at home getting ready to be a dad and shit like that. And, you know, people are still talking about him. Like, he's elevating himself just by nothing. He's getting elevated further into the psyche. And, yeah, honestly, you know, from Floyd's perspective, again, say Connor, somehow it happens. Now, Floyd's never going to allow it to happen because he'll always want more money and he won't understand that it'd be better for him to take a dollar and give it all to Connor for his legacy. But if it did happen somehow, if you're Floyd, this is actually a genius way because right now he's 49-0. He's tied Rocky Marciano's career record. He can go down in history undefeated. Everybody always is like, well, right, he's not going to come back to get the clean 50. You know, that seems like a logical thing. He can pick anybody he wants. But for Conor McGregor to be his 50th and final win, because he'd obviously win in a boxing match, it would be this perfect way to go, like, to if you're Floyd, to elevate yourself to not just really great because you talked a lot, but, like, a legendary thing because you'll be the boxer that proved boxing could beat up those mixed martial artists. Like, it'd be like this old throwback type of deal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, it'll never happen, but if it did, it'd be a really cool story for Floyd, and Conor would make a lot of money, and he probably wouldn't be hurt by it. So almost everybody could probably benefit from this if they all want money. Yeah.
I mean, I still think, and I'm just guessing here, I still think Dana's mindset is, like, Conor getting knocked out by Floyd in the third round of that fight would be bad for him long-term as a draw, and he wouldn't want to risk maybe his only star right now. Oh, in a fight like that?
They're definitely
like,
not going to do it for those reasons. I mean, it would be a bigger risk if it was a couple of years ago because it'd be really bad if he lost to Floyd and he'd get exposed and they'd wipe the floor with him real quick. But at least then Floyd would be gone or he'll be gone shortly. So people would be like, oh, that was just Floyd. He was the greatest boxer ever. It'd be really bad if it was like 5-10 years ago something like that would happen. Because then you'd still have the boxer constantly fighting. Mm. You know, Floyd would really have that over their head. But, again, it's not going to happen. It's all just very well-calculated stuff. So, good for them.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing Mayweather said, too, was I guess McGregor in the UFC, he was referring to. They know what my number is. My number was a guaranteed $100 million. That was my number. We're the A side. I don't know how much money McGregor has made. I'm pretty sure he hasn't even made $10 million in a MMA bout. We were willing to give him $15 million, and then we could talk about splitting the percentage, the back end percentage on pay-per-view. So, I mean,
Floyd must really want that fight, you know? 15 up front plus points? It depends on the points you get.
Right, but to me it's like McGregor's the only fight for Floyd. Who else is out there for him right now in the boxing world that would draw? He could have an easy win. Like that thing will do at least 2 million buys, you would think.
Yeah, I mean, it would be huge and it would be an easy win. I'm totally with you.
He should be giving Connor $50 million. Like if that was really the negotiations, no wonder why it's not going anywhere. And you know what I mean? Like clearly it could be complete bullshit what Mayweather's saying. And generally, I think what he says is bullshit, so I don't believe what he said. But if that's true, it's like you're so lowballing Connor when he's going to make you so much more money and be an easier fight than anybody else, that, like, he should be splitting it 50-50 with them.
Oh, yeah, he should, but again, these aren't pro wrestlers. They're not guys thinking about only making money. Like, for them, again, I've talked about this a lot over the time, but the whole idea, when you're rich at a certain level, numbers are just something you keep track of on paper. It's just a way to keep score, and for Floyd, winning the battle over who gets more money,
it's really more the fight than the one in the ring.
Yeah, because that is the one. That's the part that says lets him say in advance, "That's right, I'm more important. I mean more to this fight than you do." And you know, for Floyd, that's a big deal. And you know, for Connor, for both of them, it's a way to get out of it. You know, really, like Floyd can just keep it there, and Connor can be like, "I'm not gonna fucking fight you for less than, you know, at least half." So, yeah, who cares?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Floyd, for me, was how long they drew out the Pacquiao fight. It was like that talk went on for literally like 5 or 6 years, and they dragged that out so long that I totally lost interest in him. Like, coming off the De La Hoya fight, I was like, this guy is a huge star, and he's going to be a big deal, and he can talk the talk, and he's a great fighter, and he had all this stuff going for him. But after all that stuff with Pacquiao, it was just like, it left a sour taste in my mouth. And then when the fight finally happens, it sucks. Just the whole thing with him. I just got bored with him a long time ago, and this is just more of the same for me with him. But it matters because, again, people are talking about it. It's making news.
Yeah, you know what? You know, from Floyd's perspective, he probably actually maximized the amount of money he was going to make in boxing and the way he handled everything. Because by delaying the fight with Pacquiao, he always kept that alive. He was still doing huge numbers before the Pacquiao fight. And he also delayed Pacquiao's chances of beating him because, you know, he waited until Pacquiao was past his prime, making the fight even safer for him. And then because they had built up for so long, while he did risk a lot when Pacquiao lost the fight, by the time it came around, it was like this. It was just timed right, and they did like their 4 million buys. So, yeah, I mean, I would say Floyd doesn't need money, but you know he's going to need money soon. You know he's going to fucking blow it all on something. Like, he owns some sort of like wild exotic zoo animals, and it's going to maul someone or something like that.
In fights that are definitely, I shouldn't say definitely, but are very likely to happen, we've got UFC Fight Night 103 coming up this Sunday night, January 15th, at the Talking Stick Resort Arena in Phoenix, Arizona. The show is headlined by Yair Rodriguez going up against the returning BJ Penn. Obviously, Penn is a legend from the past, probably the greatest 16-10-2 fighter ever. Interesting fight because Penn hasn't fought in, I want to say it's over 3 years now, and he's coming off like a really, really bad loss to Frankie Edgar. So there's a lot of questions about where is BJ Penn at this point in his career. He's lost three in a row. Granted, they were against, you know, either bigger fighters or the best fighters in his weight class with Nick Diaz, Rory McDonald, and Frankie Edgar. But he has been on the shelf for nearly 3 years and didn't look good recently. Yair Rodriguez is kind of a young, up-and-coming guy who's had some, like, spectacular knockouts but hasn't really fought anybody, I don't want to say good, but anybody elite anyways. So certainly an interesting fight to see where both guys are at.
Bruce Leroy wasn't elite for you?
Elite? No. Good, but not elite.
Yeah, no.
Thoughts on for me, I don't want to say Penn has no chance. Maybe, you know, Rodriguez has no takedown defense, which is possible considering his background. And Penn can take him down and stay on top of him for three rounds or maybe get a submission or something. But I don't like Penn's chances standing with Rodriguez at all.
I'll say this. BJ Penn's had a very weird return. You know, he was supposed to fight almost a year ago against Dennis Seaver before he got suspended for cheating, kind of, maybe. And then he was supposed to, you know, fight Ricardo Lamas, and then that fell through. And now he's got Yair Rodriguez. Like, he went from, like, okay, that fight kind of makes sense for a comeback, to, wow, that's a really big step up in competition, to, huh, that guy's really good, but he's not a big name. Like, Penn's just been chugging along. I think the biggest advantage he has in this fight is training camps. Just, you know, he's been training at Greg Jackson's a little bit more. I know exactly where Yair Rodriguez is training now. Like, they show it in the special. I'm like, oh, he's training at that jiu-jitsu gym. Like, I know what kind of the clientele and the people that train at these gyms in my area. And he's not going to be in there jiu-jitsu-wise with tons and tons of killers. Like, there's just the caliber of athletes are there. I can't speak to the boxing that he's getting. But I know I'm blind to it, but I just want Penn to get that one last win. I think this is kind of a winnable fight for him. On the feet, he's had problems in the past. You know, really, with guys who are super, who are very quick. But, yeah, and Yair Rodriguez is quick, but it's more like the Taekwondo type of kicking. as far as like pure boxing, he's not really a great pure boxer necessarily, like Frankie Edgar was. And so I can see Penn maybe doing okay. And on the ground, I think, you know, his jiu-jitsu and wrestling, that kind of stuff will last a lot longer than striking skills will. And he's, you know, realistically, until you're physically disabled almost, like, you just learn so many and refine your technique the older you get. You know, Penn gets it down. He might just be able to tap him, and Penn might be able to just get it down. You know, we've seen him in the past. Granted, it was at 170 usually, oddly enough, but he's just gone out there and grabbed dudes and took them down. We found John Fitch. He just went on and just fuck you and grab you, double leg you, take you down, take your back. He just imposed his will. So he's got that ability in him. So I'm gonna pick BJ just because I really want him to win, because I want him to fight again and I want to go see it live. He's the only guy out there who I ever really have never seen live that I want to see him live.
I'm a big Penn fan. Love the guy. I mean, he's fighting Machida in Hawaii. You know what I mean? Like, and now he's fighting at 145. Like, he's crazy. He's crazy. And he was super talented. But, again, we're talking about a guy who's won one fight in the last 7 years. Do you know what I mean?
I was like, going to guess seven. I'm like, well,
and the fight was against Matt Hughes, who was washed up at the time. And it was like a flash knockout. And then it's like the losses to Edgar. Granted, Edgar's great. Whatever, it was not a good style matchup for him, whatever. But he took beatings in the Diaz and McDonald fights. It's 3 years later now. Granted, Rodriguez is probably the worst guy he's fought in maybe – ever. You know what I mean?
Since his early days in the UFC.
Maybe like the second Pulver fight? I mean, would you consider that Jens Pulver
I would say that Jens Pulver was below this Yair Rodriguez. But for the most part, I mean, that is really one of the great things about BJ Penn is that you got to go back a long ways before you can find a time when he didn't fight somebody that was not just good, but really good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, just based on that last Edgar fight where remember all the stuff he like said he couldn't make weight and he had all that drama and he was fighting on like his tippy toes, like it wasn't the same dude. And I don't know if that was because of the weight cut or if he was just shot, which is totally possible coming off getting pounded on by
the way he was on his toes like that. That wasn't like that's not the sign of a shot fighter. That's the sign of somebody trying something different or weird. I don't know why. Like, if he had, like, you know, you could say he shot if he was getting knocked out or dropped and hurt and things like that. Like, there was definitely signs in that fight that he was shot, the way he played his jiu-jitsu. But that weird-ass stance is just some dipshit, I think, getting in his head. I don't know.
Yeah. It'll be – and he's been off 3 years. I mean, the people, like – with somebody like Penn, nobody talks about ring rust or any of that, but 3 years is a long freaking layoff. I mean,
especially when you're 38.
Right.
That's like 6 or 7 years for normal people. Like, it really is. Like, the older you get, like, you know, 20 to 26, that's like the same as 35 to 38. Like, that's a big layoff.
Yeah.
And for a guy who's not like he's a health nut, like, not that BJ's probably been like super out of shape, but. You know, if Johnny Hendricks balloons up between fights, I don't really have a lot of faith that BJ Penn was out there watching his carbs or anything.
Yeah, I mean, Penn said today that he's at 153 pounds, which is a good sign, I guess. But my one big thing after this fight is if BJ wins the fight and is like does it in impressive fashion, Greg Jackson and Winklejohn there should be coach of the year already, only in the first month of the year, because that would be an impressive turnaround.
It would be what the fuck was I going to say about BJ Penn? I thought I had something insightful, and I can't remember what it was at all. Shit. That's not good.
It happens.
Yeah. Damn it. Oh, well.
All right. Also on the show in the semi-main event, we've got Joe Lozon versus Marcin Held. Should be a fun fight. Held's the...
Oh, I remember what I was going to say. Okay,
go for it.
Okay. BJ Penn's entire career kind of hit the, kind of went off the skids with the first loss to Frankie Edgar. He never kind of recovered, blah, blah, blah. But remember right. that, and I would say he clearly lost the second fight with Frankie, and then it went on. But that first fight with Frankie was very, very, very close. And I think I scored it for Penn. I thought Penn should have won. And if he had gotten that victory, they probably wouldn't have done a rematch. And the next opponent he would have faced may have been Gray Maynard. And Maynard right. would have been stylistically a guy very good for BJ Penn to fight. And, you know, it's very possible the Penn would have gone on to defend the title a couple times there at lightweight because some of those guys would have been kind of good style matchups for him. And maybe he would just retire then or something like that. And, well, I guess he probably never would have done that. But, you know, history could be totally different. Instead, he just, you know, he lost to Frankie, and then he had to fight Frankie again, he lost, and then he's moving up in weight and because he didn't know what to do anymore at lightweight, and then he's moving down in weight, but he's fighting this Frankie a third time, and it just kind of seems like his career's been floundering. Like, he's almost been, like, taunted by Frankie Edgar, it seems, for the past 7 years.
Yeah, for me, the thing with Penn, you know, in the most recent past, this latter half of his career was – he was like a guy with no division, I felt like. Like, the guys at 155 and 145 might have been a little too quick for him, but he wasn't big enough and strong enough to compete with the guys at 170. Like, even in the McDonald and Diaz fights, I thought like he looked good in the first round. Like, he was competitive. Then it was like these dudes just leaning up against him on the cage just wore him out, and he couldn't handle, like, Rory McDonald in the cage at 190 pounds. He couldn't deal with that. And then if he had to fight somebody really quick, like Edgar, who could, you know, switch stances and level change and really just be all over the place, Penn couldn't hit him. So it was like a weird spot for Penn in the last, you know, 6-7 years, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you can kind of see where a lot of the guys in his kind of era, if you will, as a lightweight, look who he beat, Sean Sherk, a guy who fought at 170, 155, and 145. You know, Kenny Florian, same thing, to a lesser extent. Diego Sanchez, been 70 to 45. Like, been a lot of guys who are kind of like in this weird middle ground where they are definitely searching for that ideal weight class. And for a long time, it was 55 until the 55ers kind of got flooded with all the 45ers. So, yeah, again, you know, I think definitely in the past couple of years, he was a guy that was always really great, but he lost some of his speed and he can't keep up the, you know, compensate with strength. So, you know, he got old. Shit happens.
Yeah. He just had bad style matchups too. But then in – where were we? The semi-main, we've got Joe Lauzon versus Marcin Held. Held, if you remember, is kind of the leg lock guy from Bellator. He's coming off a loss to Diego Sanchez, a unanimous decision loss. He was kind of flopping around, and he was scoring on the feet in that Sanchez fight, and then went back to his bread and butter, which is the ground game, but he could just never get Diego in too much of a compromised position. Then we've also got Joe Lauzon, who's coming off a loss, always a fun fighter, most bonuses in UFC history, that sort of thing. How do you see that one going? You think Lauzon slowed down too much to keep up with Held, or are you favoring Joe in that one?
I favor Joe. For one, he's naturally bigger. Marcin Held's gone from 45 to 55 throughout his career. I mean, stylistically, it's actually kind of probably one of the worst matchups out there for Held, in that all his game is leg locks, and that's what he does. That's all he's going to do. His traditional jiu-jitsu is very good as well, but what makes him special is his ability to, you know, take your leg. Of all the guys at lightweight, I would say Joe Lauzon's probably just about the best, maybe Ryan Hall as well, but Joe Lauzon's one of the best leg lockers. So if you're Marcin Held, the one thing that you're better at than pretty much everyone, you're fighting another guy who's as close as it's going to get. It's not like you're facing... again, I'll just say Gray Maynard for shits and giggles or something like that. And so combine that with the fact that Lauzon's just significantly superior on his feet, and he's got so much more power. I think that Lauzon probably grounds and pounds and finishes him, turtle, you know, twisting around out of leg locks.
Okay. Then also on the main card, a fight that I'm not that excited about is Court McGee versus Killa B. Ben Saunders. McGee's coming off a win, I think, against Dominique Steele, which no one probably saw or cared about. And Ben Saunders is actually returning to the UFC after being gone for one fight. He is coming off a win against Jacob Volkman at Fight Night at the Island in Welsh, Minnesota. He won by armbar in 17 seconds. Any thoughts on that fight?
I'm kind of impressed he tapped out Volkman that quickly. You know, we should have – that's in Volkman's hometown, or home state there in Minnesota. I don't know. And he's a chiropractor. I don't know why I know that.
He also does not like Obama.
That's right, yeah.
Remember he wanted to fight Obama?
That's right. That was good. Yeah, now we see lots of people want to fight Trump. Nothing changes in life, people. Everything just repeats itself. Time is a flat circle, and no one gives a shit about this fight. This fight will be like time stops. Maybe it'll be great, but I doubt it. I just don't give a shit about either one of them.
Okay, in a fun fight, opening the main card on Fox Sports 1, we've got John Moraga versus Sergio Pettis in a flyweight fight.
Yeah, that's really good. Big step up for Pettis. This is a, you know, fighting a former title challenger. This is a fight that could put Pettis on the map significantly and make him a, you know, a guy one fight away from fighting for the world title. And it's a tough fight. Moraga's no joke, so... I think it should be good, but it'll probably be, you know, like most midget weight fights. Just lots of, like, hummingbirds hitting each other, and you're like, yeah, that was really good, but I don't really remember anything that happened.
Yeah, the thing with Moraga, he is on a bit of a skid. He's 2-3 in his last five. But unlike a lot of guys in the flyweight division, usually he'll either finish the guy or get finished. He doesn't go to decision a lot. Obviously, Pettis, I think, is probably the most underrated guy in the division. He doesn't get hardly any press, especially considering who his brother is. You'd think there'd be more talk about Sergio. But he's only lost, I mean, two fights in the UFC. He is 5-2 overall. It's not like he's some scrub. And one of them was to Alex Caceres, I believe, at bantamweight.
And a fight that he was winning until the very, very last second there.
Yeah, it was 4:39 in the third round when he lost. And then Ryan Benoit or Benoit, depending on how you describe him, is his other loss. So, I mean, I like Pettis in the fight. It seems like he's on the upswing coming off two straight wins, but we shall see.
Yeah, I like Pettis as well, and I think that the problem that Pettis has had really is the losses just seem to come when he seemed to be building momentum. Like, he's kind of on a run, and then, oh, and then you lose to Ryan Benoit. And, you know, on a run, oh, you lose to Bruce Leroy. He looks really good, but he's so young, and I think people just wait for him to kind of really put together a good long run. And he just, again, keeps starting and stopping. And but, you know, a win here would definitely be, like I say, take him, I think, to the next level where he'll start getting talked a lot about a lot. I don't know.
The prelims on Fox Sports 1 and the UFC Fight Pass portion of the show is pretty light on name value fighters. Anything catch your eye? I know Frankie Sainz or Sainz is fighting Augusto Mendez Tanquinho, who I know is like a really good jiu-jitsu guy, right?
Yeah, a spectacular jiu-jitsu guy. I think he's actually married to Mackenzie Dern.
I don't think that's accurate.
He's married to somebody that's hot.
I think they were a couple, but I think that fell apart.
Oh, maybe that's what it is. Either way, yeah, the fight's there. I'm kind of surprised that Ryan Bader isn't fighting. You know, they're in Phoenix. That's where he's from. But
so he claims he's the hottest free agent in MMA right now.
That's right. He's a free agent. Oh well.
He's getting offers left and right.
Yeah, I'm sure that. You know, it's just World Series of Fighting in between all their lawsuits is beating on the hatches of...
I heard Ari Emanuel was, like, knocking on his door trying to get in his house to sign him. That's what I heard.
Probably wants to put him in the next Entourage movie. Actually, I think he would fit into some movie. I never saw it, but I imagine he would be the perfect level of, like, douche fighter to be in it.
Could be. Anything else on the show? Catch your eye? Anybody nope. you're looking forward to seeing? Okay. Well, I think that's it for me, unless I missed something or there was anything else you wanted to talk about.
People shouldn't forget Friday night, Invicta.
Okay. What's big on that card?
Just the Megan Anderson fight.
Okay. For the interim title?
For the interim title. And, you know, honestly, like, I looked up and down this card, and some of it's just because of the nature of how small women's MMA is. But the one thing I really liked about Invicta is, and this is a weird thing to say, it reminded me of ECW in that I knew somebody kind of in every match, and they all kind of have, like, their own weird little gimmick. Like, oh, she wears a cowboy hat. She dresses like Wonder Woman. And, oh, she's got the mohawk. Like, I can recognize pretty much everybody, and that's kind of really, you know, that's really impressive for a women's MMA show. This isn't, you know, the biggest thing in the world, but they do a pretty good job of consistently having name, whatever name there is to their fighters. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I hope it's good.
Yeah, I never hope for a bad show. On that note, I think that does it for me here.
Yeah, that's it.
We're okay. Cold open, cold close. I guess we'll see you next week. What are we calling the show this week?
MMA and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's an accurate description of what we do here every week.
Yeah, it works.
All right, thanks for listening to MMA and Stuff. For Mike, this is Matt. We'll talk to you next week.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you enjoy your stay.